Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time, Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food producers and food consumers. It's a Wednesday. That means J.C. Cole is now wishing he was on the plains of America, somewhere in northeast Colorado, western Nebraska, so that he too could experience 18 inches of snow with high wind. Hey, J.C.
I think you got that last part wrong. I'm very happy right here. It's 40 degrees in an undisclosed location in New Jersey.
Somebody's horse barn. I'm hiding out in somebody's horse stalls.
But Trent, we got to start off with Murphy's Law, because Murphy's Law will affect us all. Okay. And affects us all, right? And that's part of prepping, is to be able to respond quickly. So you got it this morning when Skype wouldn't let you log on.
Somebody wouldn't let me log on.
Well, it wasn't Skype. It was Zoom. Yeah. Yes, right. And of course, I got it where my printer ran out of black ink. So my notes were not printed out. I'm 2 minutes late because I ran upstairs, changed the whole font on my notes to blue, and was able to print it out so I can read it.
Time out. You actually generate show notes and get ready for the program? Who does that?
I do. Yes. Yes, I take this stuff serious.
Okay. And back to the original concept. Who was Murphy anyway?
I'll research it for next week. But I think it had to do with World War I.
No kidding. Well, now you piqued my interest. I want to know now.
No. There was like a Sergeant Murphy or something that from World War I that you know, said things would go wrong at the most opportune time. So,
Captain Edward A. Murphy, an engineer working on an Air Force project, MX-981. Oh, my goodness. Guess what that project was?
Tell us.
To see how much sudden deceleration a person can stand in a crash.
Oh, delightful.
Oh, my goodness.
Did they have volunteers to be the test dummy?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to research that a little deeper.
Right. So there actually was a Murphy, right?
Right.
Who came up with this kind of rule of thumb.
Yeah.
And of course, he was an engineer. I'd like to point that part out. An engineer.
It says nothing about Lehigh University in his pedigree, but I haven't really researched it.
Yes. Right. So, you know, a very interesting thing, because unfortunately, oftentimes, you know, we'll have disasters and we write them off as coincidence. And as you and I and many of the other folks have been talking about, is we're seeing a very large amount of food production and energy production facilities just for, by coincidence, catching on fire and burning down.
Not to mention yesterday.
Yes. And so why don't we just get right in on yesterday, right? The Phillips 66 Texas refinery tank farm that puts out basically 150,000 barrels per day caught on fire.
Including natural gas. It's a major natural gas production facility.
Right. And as your good friend Steve had pointed out, also the Suncor refinery in Colorado had shut down January the 3rd, until further notice. And that produces 35 to 40% of the gasoline and the diesel used by Colorado. That's a big number.
It is a big number, and it's going to prove
right.
my
And
statement to Chuck. I just told Chuck Miller from Brush, Colorado this week at breakfast, Monday morning at breakfast, that in 2022, we produced more oil, refined more oil. We didn't do any new exploration. Everybody thinks that we're depleted of oil, period. But we actually refined more oil and set a record on natural gas in 2022 for the history of the country. So up until we started blowing things up, we didn't have a shortage, so to speak. We just had a failed policy in seeking new oil reserves. But now everything's changing with the infrastructure blowing up.
Yes, and so this week an article came out that not many people know about. It was the Eco Health Alliance whistleblower, bioterrorism expert, and military veteran by the name of Dr. Andrew Huff, with a possible explanation of the food supply, and I would add energy supply, fires. Right. Huff has access to government information about simulating a food supply attack. In other words, I think he did his PhD on it and has been studying it for many years, right? The information comes from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Food and Agricultural Sector Criticality Assessment Tool, nicknamed FASTCAT. And it turns out that a lot of Department of Homeland Security came up with critical areas, food supply, in production, and put it into this FASTCAT database. And those look to be getting hit. So somebody's running down
the list.
The list. Of course, he reported this to the FBI, which showed as much concern as Joe Biden's documents and a few other things, and nothing got done.
Yeah.
So it looks like we have a fifth column, of which we've talked about very many times, targeting food supply productions. Okay. And along that line, and people just... It's not being reported, right? And along that line, last week, the Carus chemical facility in LaSalle, Illinois, caught on fire. And it is the largest and potentially only domestic producer of potassium permanganate and sodium permanganate. And not many people know, except for some preppers, a few preppers, the permanganate is the primary use for water treatment, accounting for over 50% of domestic consumption. So the producer of the chemical that cleans water, treats 50% of our water, which is 87% of the Americans, apparently just got taken offline.
Mm-hmm.
And in that,
I wish you would have told us to be ready for water that was not safe to drink.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was on my list right after diesel.
I specifically remember you saying you need 3-year supply of diesel in your inventory.
Yes, and also to buy calcium hypochlorite, which is pool shock, which is basically chlorine, because last year, so that was 2022, two chlorine factories also caught on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like our food and our water is under attack. This, I should put on my tinfoil hat, because no one would believe that.
Yeah. Murphy's Law is, if it's going to happen, it'll happen. If something bad could happen, it'll happen. That's Murphy's Law. We're back with more J.C. Cole Roll Route after this. All right, off the bat today, I want to talk about Certified Piedmontese and what an amazing prime rib that we had this week at the meeting part of the National Western, but it was the North American Piedmontese Association, and it was a grass-fed prime rib besides. I could never believe it, but it was cooked to perfection. It was tender. It's everything that the Piedmontese can and should be. If you're a Great Plains cattleman and you'd like to be a part of supplying this, go to the website, longcreekcattleco.com, find the details, get a hold of somebody and say, hey, what's Trent talking about? How do I be a part of this system? If you're just hungry, or even not hungry, but need some nourishment, go to certifiedpiedmontese.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside J.C. Cole, getting us ready for, well, what he's been telling us for every Wednesday for the last 2 years. Another fire here, another fire there. Do you have the baseline? Because that's what, when anytime somebody says, oh my goodness, you guys are ridiculous. What's the baseline on the number of fires that happen to food, energy, and now water treatment facilities? Do we have any data?
No. Unfortunately, I don't. And, you know, and you have to look at it. That starts to become a full-time job with a lot of resources to monitor it. And, of course, in theory, our government's supposed to do that. But they seem busy doing something else.
Yeah, I think they're busy.
Yes, yes.
Or distracted.
They're looking for Corvettes. Right. Okay. So... No, it's serious, because if you look at it, the critical items we need for life, just by coincidence, are getting catching on fire. And then of course you can add to it a direct government interaction, such as Joe Biden's administration and Governor Hochul, who is the Wicked Witch of the East, the governor of New York, are going to ban the sale of gas stoves.
Are they really going to follow through on that?
Well, you know, you got to wonder, because if I'm correct in the numbers, in New York, that 70% of the people have gas stoves. Well, you know, and it's been around for only 100 years, and now it's killing us.
Right.
Right. Now, we've got to save the children. We've got to save the children. And this is a nasty one. And of course, we had the the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. And all those people who were really concerned about saving the environment flew in on their private jets. I think there were like 2,000 private jets or some staggering number.
I think you're only halfway there.
Concerned about lowering the carbon footprint. Yeah. You know what footprint is?
JC, before you do that, it's just like them thumbing their nose at the peasants, because they have to hear the roar. The last time they did this, there was tons of people around the world, not just in the United States, not just conspiracy tinfoil hat wearing JC Coles, who all said, wait a minute. How can you actually be such a hypocrite, fly in here with your private jet? And it was 4,000 last time, I remember clearly. And yet they do it again. It's just like, we don't care what you think. We're going to tell you what to do.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I think I didn't research it because it was early morning and Murphy was having a good time with me. Right? But apparently... John Kerry has came out and said that the Davos crew is inspired by aliens.
Oh, he said that.
I'll see if I can pull it up for next week. I'm sure he's inspired by something, right?
Yeah.
So I
understand he also just point blank said that they're on a path of depopulation.
Yeah. And it looks like there's a very large amount of evidence that's happening. I don't know if anybody else has noticed, but people keep on falling over dead on TV. I don't remember that.
And in real life, too.
Yes.
I've shared this in other venues, and I'll tell you now. In the past week, I've never had this happen to me ever. In the past week, there have now been four people I've contacted about being on an interview with me that told me I'd love to. I'm really sick right now. I'll get back to you. I'll correct that. One is trying to interview me. The other three, I'm trying to interview, but all of those people are not well enough to have a conversation.
And, you know, it's going to be interesting, unfortunately, and painful. If 70% of our population has taken the clot shot, right, and if it is really deadly, we're going to see the number of sick people and people falling over astronomically increase. And nobody's really thinking that if we lose, let's say 40% of our population, what happens to the economy? What happens to the country? What happens to the supply chain? People aren't thinking.
There's nobody alive that can get their mind around that percentage of the population dying. Even me.
I agree. I agree. I wrestle with it every day.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a part of some big wrecks and 40 years of owning and managing livestock. And I've had disease challenges through the years where you lose 40 to 70% of a herd population in a nursery, or TGE was the one that just comes to mind, where you have complete devastation. That works on you mentally. And if it works on you mentally when you lose animals, what about when you lose a community?
Yeah. You know, I'd let you know, I was a first responder. I was a ski patrol for many years in my earlier life. And we had to plan for triage, which is when we would have a major, major serious accident, like a ski lift breaking, and you'd have 400 injured people and maybe 10 patrollers to respond.
Mm-hmm.
What do? You have to go through the 400 very quickly and triage them on who you can't help, who you can help, and who doesn't need help. And you basically, unfortunately, for those very seriously injured, you write them off. And I hate to say it, but we are in triage right now. We're looking for who we can save.
You mean those episodes of MASH were actually based on real events?
I think maybe they were giving us the heads up.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Been the case in front line of war forever, right?
Absolutely.
Where you have to put a priority on who you spend your time with.
Yep. And you have to make those decisions, and they're terrible because they'll go with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oops, interaction. Sorry.
Once we get through this intersection.
Right.
Hank said that on Monday, and it just stuck in my mind all week. Not sure why.
So another big event happened that not many people were paying attention to, but we've talked about. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia announces that they officially are open to settling trade for oil and natural gas in currencies other than the U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've been saying is this was coming. The petrodollar there was a monopoly in the world to buy oil and gas in petrodollars. And now that looks like it's over, which means the basis that's holding up the U.S. dollar is over. And we're going to get some very, very painful dominoes falling for that. Won't happen necessarily tomorrow, but it will happen, I think, beginning over this year. Because if you start to lose the support of the United States dollar, then basically the majority of all banks are based on the dollar and the euro, and they're linked. And now that's changing.
Did you bring home some rubles when you came home from Latvia? Oh, that's a private financial question. It's like asking me how many cows I have. I didn't.
Right.
Please disregard that question. J.C. No, Cole. But you can, go ahead.
Yes, you can. You can say you have a cow or two.
I have something to go outside and check on right now. We'll be back with the second half of Rural Route after this.
The Protect the Harvest newsletter came out yesterday. It is packed with a ton of information. Information that you need to know, information that you can take to help empower yourself to maintain your own property rights, because at the end of the day, what we are achieving is a free and fed America. So, two things. Number one, there's a fundraiser going to occur this weekend, Springfield, Missouri. Ask you to get details about being a part of that. It's on the web at protecttheharvest.com. And it is all about that. That's a Whitetails Unlimited fundraiser for Protect the Harvest, by the way. Get the details about that and find a way to empower yourself about a free and fed America. As I said, there's a lot of information available. It's up to you to find it and use it to empower yourself. ProtectTheHarvest.com.
Welcome back, Trent Luce, alongside J.C. Cole, Roll Route. I got home from Denver late last night. That was good timing. Today, obviously, JC, we have some internet issues. I'm going to tie that to the weather. But I have to tell you that I had as much trouble. No, I had more trouble with internet access in the Denver area this week than I've ever had in one spot. The internet may not be stable going forward. I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily time yet, but again, when technology fails, what are you going to do when you have no communication? For those of us who can, you might want to invest in a satellite phone, because that communication will be the last to go down.
But everybody you talk to has to have a satellite phone too.
Well, that's even the good part. You only give satellite phones to people you want to talk to. Right.
That's the way it is now. I only talk to people I want to talk to. There's no difference.
Right. So let's touch on one of our favorite subjects, and that is what happened this week in history that was of significance. And if you notice, I constantly am harping on the banking system. And that there are, you know, there are some old families, rumored to be about 13, that have been controlling our world for 1,000 years. So January 16,
now
1412. Yeah, January 16, 1412. So before.
That was a while ago.
Yes, that was before Columbus was born. He didn't sail the blue till 1492. So he wasn't around. The Medici family is appointed official banker of the papacy. So the Medicis were controlling the Vatican Bank.
Okay.
Now, interestingly enough, there's been at least three Medicis that have been pope. So apparently they're very close to God because they keep on getting picked. Right. But this is to show you how far back it goes. Right. But to some better news, January the 16th also, but 1970. So I think we were both there at that time.
Yeah, I was.
Buckminster Fuller receives the Gold Medal Award for the American Institute of Architects. And for those who don't know, Bucky Fuller is one of the American geniuses. I think he was an engineer or a physicist that came up with incredible inventions. So, just a little blurb on him. After World War II, Fuller taught at Black Mountain College in North Carolina. That will come up again today, right? Where he worked perfecting the geodesic dome. Although he didn't invent it, he did make it practical. So what not many people know, so you get into civil engineering, is that almost all of our buildings are based on gravity, on
Right.
compression,
Makes
on
sense.
compression. Right. And that's one of the reasons we have trouble with earthquakes, is because the earth moves and knocks off the compression, or basically the gravity pull direction, and your wall falls over. But a geodesic dome works on tension. So it's actually holding itself up and together. So
Right.
when you have an earthquake, the geodesic dome doesn't collapse.
Should shift with the earth moving.
Correct. Correct. And the other interesting thing is, if you actually did a calculation on the amount of materials you use, a geodesic dome uses much less materials for the space it produces. The problem is, it's generally round or oval, and that's and we go through life on squares. Everything we design is like straight lines and 90-degree corners. So it's just an interesting piece of information. But I think the geodesic dome will come in. And if you look at what they theoretically put on the moon and all those in those space movies, it's always a geodesic dome.
I never thought about that. Actually, because I
Well,
never watched a space movie.
yes. So, and now again, January the 17th, 1920, was the first day of prohibition, and alcohol becomes illegal. It was actually an amendment to the Constitution, and it lasted for 13 years. Until December the 5th, 1933. So we had talked about that one of the things it did was it made it illegal for farmers to produce alcohol to run their tractors. So the engine design went to petroleum, and the monopolies of the petroleum. And what did we discuss earlier was that the monopoly of buying petroleum in dollars is now over. So we're in a 100-year chess game on
Yeah,
petroleum.
there's some dots to be connected there, isn't there? I mean, I assume most people know that the early cars, even from the Ford company, were based on gasohol.
Yeah. And while there's not a massive difference, there is a difference. And of course, now from the Bush era, they started putting alcohol back into gasoline, and it's been wreaking havoc on a couple of different things, including the engines and the gaskets, which, if you notice, a lot of your small engines get thrown out real quick these days. It's all related to the alcohol in the gasoline. And of course, it disturbed the entire financial structure of production of corn.
Well, there's plenty of uses for corn. It's just we need to keep exploring those because corn can be aside. I mean, you use ethanol if you don't have any petroleum-based products, okay? But you can make clothing, you can make so many things out of corn with the right
Well,
innovation, and
yeah,
it's being done.
the same with hemp. You know, why is hemp illegal? I mean, it doesn't have any of
THC.
the chemicals.
Right.
And so it's probably illegal because it competes directly with petroleum, I would guess.
Yeah, if you look at the big picture of that, I've often marveled actually that ethanol was able to wiggle its way back into the petroleum business. That's pretty amazing actually, given what
Yeah.
we know about how all these monopolies work.
Yes. Yeah, we probably just hadn't figured out the real agenda. So, but along with that conspiracy stuff, January the 17th, 1961, I don't think you were here yet. Right.
No, but I was being thought about because my mom and dad graduated high school that year. So, romance was in the air.
Excellent. So, President Dwight D. Eisenhower delivers his farewell television address in which he warns against the accumulation of power by the military industrial complex. Now, rumor was he took out one word, military congressional industrial complex. And that's who's controlling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So Dwight D. Eisenhower was one of the good guys that just ended up being president.
Well, I think we all have different shades of gray. But certainly he did well with World War II. And there is some information that will eventually come out on some of the things he was dealing with, which they have still not told us about. And interestingly enough, he was re his the next president was JFK, and JFK gave the same warning
Oh,
about
really? Well,
not exactly saying military industrial complex, but secret societies.
why I need to research this. Eisenhower is credited with so much of the infrastructure of the interstate system.
Correct. And this
Not
is one of the things they led to. My understanding, just a little bit, is that, seeing what the Germans did with the Autobahn during
Oh.
World War II, he brought back the concept that the Germans could move very quickly their military. So the interstate system allows us to move our military very quickly to different parts of the country, right? And actually, if you notice, something has happened where I think the bridges were about 14.6, and now they're raising a lot of the overpasses to 16 feet because apparently something bigger has to come through them, but still, what we didn't calculate, or not many people really paid attention to, was that this incredible interstate system would allow us, along with inexpensive energy, diesel, would allow us to go across the country in 3 days.
Right.
And so now we have this issue with food security that a lot of our food is thousands of miles away, grown, and in economics of scale, these big countries, big companies, like for instance, this producer of potassium
Oh,
permanganate,
yeah.
right? It's the only domestic producer, and it produces 50% of what we need. Economic to scale. That fails, we're in trouble.
We're in trouble, all right. It has to do with the clock. That's the immediate trouble, not the long-term trouble. One segment after this. This would be a great day to talk about a reliable energy source, huh? Yeah, coal is that energy source. Lignite Energy Council does a phenomenal job getting information to the public. For the public that goes to find out, here's my fear. You know, as well as I do, that people don't go seek out the truth. They just listen to what's most convenient, whether it's factual or not, and then accept it to be true. The truth is, coal is environmentally friendly. Coal is reliable. Coal keeps the lights on, and people at Lignite make it happen.
Lignite.com for every bit of the verification of what I just said.
Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside J.C. Cole joining us from New Jersey, where I can be in a day and a half because I'm in the middle of the country. I can get to California in a day and a half, too. I fear that they're raising those bridges 2 feet just to get those dreaded communist-produced wind turbines through there.
Maybe, but I have the feeling they have a very short shelf life.
Yeah, I do too. Right. But they got to have a place to go with them when they take them down, so they won't have the bridges high enough. It's very interesting when you walk through that and you start talking about the interstate system and crossing the country in 3 days. My mind immediately goes to the transfer of commerce, whatever those goods may be, the supply chain. And then you bring to the forefront that actually the motivation might have been as a means of defense. So it's really interesting in how your mind is set in a certain way, because I'm born in 1966. Other than December 7th, 1941, and September the 11th, 2001, we have had nothing to worry about on U.S. soil from a military defense mechanism. We have a lot to worry about in terms of what people tell us and lie to us and cause human health issues. We have a lot there. But from a military standpoint, we just don't even know what that's like.
Right. But if you look at big changes in our infrastructure, it's almost always driven by military, military issues. Yeah.
Now, back when we had a strong military. Like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that brings up the whole thing where I've started was the danger of our supply chain breaking because we just can't jump in the car and go get food 2,000 miles away. Right? We have to create food security, and we don't have it. Right? But along that line, January 19th, in 1883, the first electric lighting system employing overhead wires was built by Thomas Edison in Roslyn. Sorry.
I think you're thinking about aliens again.
Right.
Roswell, right. New Mexico.
That might be it. And so that leads to our next issue of our electric grid is our glass jaw. It is unprotected. It is not hardened, right? It doesn't have surge protectors on it. They've known about this since Reagan, and they couldn't find $10 billion to harden the grid, which implies that somebody is manipulating behind the system to leave us vulnerable.
And so, you're going to tell us who that is?
Oh, no. The internet's a little weak right now, so we shouldn't be playing around with that. How about just that it's our glass jaw?
Yeah.
Yeah. And my understanding, which is very hard to find proof on, is that President Reagan started to harden the grid. So that was in the 80s. And that Bush Sr. stopped it. A lot of things are going to come back to Bush Sr. Since that time, nobody's been able to put in, you know, something that's going to save us. Very simple. We could spend $5 trillion for a plandemic, but we can't spend $10 billion to protect our electric grid. Now, I do understand that Trump signed an executive order to start doing that, but I haven't found any information on if any of it's been completed.
We have no problem sending money to the Ukraine. If we would just, you know, devote that, we would have zero electric grid problems, vulnerabilities. You're always going to have a problem, but vulnerability.
That's correct. And mind you that, you know, it doesn't have to be an enemy that takes down the electric grid. and it's easy to do. It can be the sun. and the sun has been kicking out some very nasty flashes just recently. And we're going into the peak of the 11-year cycle for sunspots. That should be next year, 2024. And so, oh, good. Right? And that if we get a CME, or which is a coronal mass ejection, facing Earth and large enough, right? Basically, that's it. The electricity is turned off, and then people won't be able to watch our show. I'm really upset about this.
Yeah, that'll be the major problem if that happens. That'll be top of mind. Actually, since you and I talked last, I've done somewhat of a deep dive and wrote my column about this because I saw geese flying north for the last week. They're still flying north. And I was like, what's going on? We got a winter blast coming. It's mid-January. Geese are flying north. This isn't normal. And it sent me down the whole path of the polarity of the Earth shifting, North Pole, South Pole. I didn't know anything about that. And then it also gave me a crash course in this magnetic field that is weakening, that protects Earth from these very sunspots, and that it's projected that, well, every 300,000 years, however long that is and whatever that means, that the polarity of the Earth goes from north to south. But if at the same time, the weakening of the magnetic force field that protects us from sunspots and these other debris that apparently come at us all the time from the atmosphere, we are somewhat vulnerable, and they have no idea whether it will cause extinction of life as we know it on Earth.
Well, I could chip in. I've been watching that for many years. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of my degrees is in geology, and the magnetosphere is at the weakest point that we have ever seen in our lifetime, or could monitor it. And you're right that it absorbs a lot of these things coming from the sun that protect us, specifically UVA, UVB, and UVC. For the first time in history, we're now monitoring UVC at ground level. It was always absorbed by the magnetosphere. But the real biggie is that when the sun gets upset and starts spitting out different how would you say, coronal mass ejections and other things, we get a good amount of X-ray and gamma ray. And that's not real good for us, right? But it's not going to be an extinction event because we always make it through, some of us. Not all, right? Which is always coming down to, and actually we started with, is triage.
Right,
okay,
absolutely.
Who are we going to save? I'm going to tell you, I'm going to save my goats and my chickens.
Yeah, I'd put chickens high on the list.
Yeah.
Everybody should.
Yeah.
Which, how far you want to go down this path, you know, how ironic is it that we killed 50 million birds last year? We now have egg shortages. We have chicken costing more money than beef in some cases. That's absolutely ridiculous. At a time when all of this is kind of accumulating at once.
And I haven't seen anybody prove that there's bird flu. And of course, they're using a test that we know can have 90% false positives.
Yeah.
And even more so, they say, well, if you have one bird and a flock of 5 million, you have to kill them all.
They kill them all.
Right.
I do have to say that I had this conversation with my friends in South Dakota who had a flock of birds killed on them last year. They say, I've not seen this myself, and I don't dispute anything these guys say, but they say they see dead migratory birds around their place.
I haven't seen that, but I'm not saying it can or it can't, but it's a very strange thing. If you get sick, you kill the entire flock. No, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't create herd immunity.
And furthermore, there is zero risk. Well, there's never zero risk. There's
less than a 1% risk that you're going to have some human implication if you actually cook the bird and eat it.
Correct. And my understanding is it doesn't transfer into eggs.
No.
So.
Nor does it jump to the human population. So what are we doing?
So it looks like somebody's lying to us. I know this is a shocker. Yep. Looks like somebody's lying to us again.
Well, that brings us back to that electric grid and look at how we've demonized the reliable sources of electricity. That being coal, obviously, because it's abundant. Natural gas, until we keep blowing up natural gas production facilities. And nuclear. And those are the three that we just don't even want to pay attention to.
By the way, did you see the natural gas pipeline that blew up between Latvia and Lithuania? My summer house is only 30 miles away from that.
Is that the Nord Stream pipeline or is that something different?
That's something totally different. It blew up about a week ago.
No, I did not see that.
Yeah. And so Latvia and Lithuania are a little bit of trouble. You got to stop poking the bear. It's a very, it's a very stupid thing to do.
Yeah. 30 seconds. What's your parting bit of wisdom today?
Well, it's kind of redundant. I mean, it goes back to get the books when technology fails and dare to prepare, because every week we see it getting worse and worse.
And here's the thing. Everybody's expecting, you alluded to this earlier, everybody's expecting that one big aha moment. No, the frog is in the pot. The pot is warming. It's going to be boiling. It's not going to happen at once. It's going to happen week after week after week, incrementally. That's the challenge that we have. Pay attention before the incremental piles up into a foot and a half of snow.
And then you can't do anything.
I got to go do something right now. We've successfully journeyed down the road, connecting food producers to food consumers. For J.C. Cole, I'm Trent Luce. Both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route. In closing today, I want to do a couple of things. I want to say thank you to the Wall of Honor for continuing to find a way to bring to the forefront those individuals that have been there for us. In fact, I'm going to be in North Dakota next week, and we have identified some veterans that their stories need to be heard, and we're going to make that happen. It's about paying tribute and giving our honor to those who've sacrificed for us. TheWallOfHonor.org. And speaking of those who sacrifice, who follow the Constitution, kudos, major kudos, and congratulations to Morgan County Sheriff from Colorado, Dave Martin, recognized as the law enforcement official for the state of Colorado by the Colorado Cattlemen, because Sheriff Martin understands what it means to be a constitutional sheriff. Shouldn't we all be that? Congratulations, Dave. Have a great day. Stay safe. Bye.